This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Going back to that hearing, virtual hearing, that was taking place just a few days ago, where Judge Stephen Boyce in the Chad and Lori Daybell saga has severed the two cases. We just heard from the state. Let's go to the second part and the defense.
All right. Thank you for the argument, Ms. Blake. Let me go back to any rebuttal argument at this point now that the state's offered their position. Mr. Pryor, would you like to make any response regarding the state's argument? And you're on mute, Mr. Pryor.
And Judge, I would like to make a brief argument. My concern is this, Judge, is that the source of the DNA evidence was in the state's possession effective June of 2020. August of 2022, there was some evidence in which we stipulated to have testing done. That was done by stipulation, in which in that stipulation I had suggested to the state, and part of that stipulation is that I would have an opportunity to do independent testing. So in June of 2022, the state's expert had an opportunity, that's over 3 years ago, to ascertain what kind of DNA evidence or what sort of evidence they could derive from the source of the evidence. They then find evidence 2 years later in August of 2022, and we enter into a stipulation for them to have that evidence tested. And continuing on then until December, Judge, of 2022, which was approximately, 3 months ago, they suddenly then find additional evidence, a significant amount of evidence. Now, by the state's own admission, their lab and their expert located this evidence in November of 2022. I was informed of this new evidence in December. So for a month after they find it, and this is the state's own timeline, in November they find this evidence, or their expert finds this evidence. They notify the state of this evidence a month later. And then the state discusses, and Judge, at one of the hearings, I had represented that Mr. The counsel for the state, we were able to, Mr. Wood, we were able to come to a rather quick agreement in regard of having this evidence tested in a lab. The discussion at that time, Judge, in December and January, when we entered that agreement to send it off to this private lab, wasn't, well, I don't want to test it, I don't want to have it done. The evidence, Judge, at that time in January was, yes, we want to have this tested, we want to get this expedited. We got this done as quickly as we could to get an independent lab to determine what we have here. But at the same time, and it's unfortunate now, the state is suggesting, well, we didn't enter into an absolute written agreement. Judge, we were in a hurry to get this to a private lab. But at the same time, Judge, I have email correspondence where I said, I want to have my own independent testing done. And I want to be able to look at this. Now, we are talking about exculpatory evidence. And there are a line of Supreme Court cases, Judge, that talk about the fact that regardless of whose fault it is, when there's exculpatory evidence available, and this is exculpatory evidence, the defense is provided an opportunity to have that exculpatory evidence tested. And Judge, I can give you the cites if you want. There's Williams versus Ryan, 623 Federal 3rd, 1258 from the Ninth Circuit. Judge, there's Harrington versus State, 659 Northwest 2nd, 509 out of Iowa. There's a significant number of cases, and those actually go to the Brady argument, Judge. But there's also a number of cases that talk about DNA evidence and the right of a defense attorney and his client to have independent testing done if there's a suggestion that there's exculpatory evidence. Rhodes versus State, 148 Idaho 215, 2009. A number of cases, Judge, talk about this. So it's not a surprise or a shock to the state when I'm sitting here saying I have a right to this evidence, and I do have a right to this evidence, and I have a right to have it independently tested. But for the state to suggest that at any time I could have called their expert and said, hey, what's the holdup since last August? Why aren't you getting me this evidence? That's almost comical for them to suggest that. And the fact that they've had an opportunity, and their expert since June of 2020 to make a determination of where the evidence is and what evidence is available is ridiculous. So, Judge, there's two scenarios here, and I have a right to test both scenarios and both theories. The suggestion is this is exculpatory evidence, and all indications seem to suggest it's exculpatory evidence. But even if it's not, as the state seems to suggest, there's a possibility that it's not. Judge, what we have is we either have a exculpatory evidence that I need to determine what it is, or we have extremely sloppy, mishandled processing by these police officers, by the state, and by their own experts in processing this information. And in either scenario, Judge, I have a right to determine what it is. So even if we accept the state's position that, well, Judge, maybe it was just because we didn't do our job and we didn't find the evidence, or that we mishandled the evidence and this was sloppily done by our state lab, by our police, and by in the chain of custody, which, by the way, they just gave me the chain of custody earlier in the week, so I haven't had a chance to go through that. In any event, it's either extremely sloppy work by the state side, or it's exculpatory evidence. And in either event, I'm entitled to know which it is. And my feeling is it's a combination of both. But I need to know, Judge, and I need time to be able to do this. I've made it clear before, and unfortunately, apparently all over the news, but I am not ready, and I'm not going to be ready. And I need this evidence to adequately provide the defense that I need to provide for Mr. Daybell, and I need severance in these cases, Judge. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pryor. Mr. Archibald, I want to hear an argument from you as well, if you request. We're kind of conducting now an ad hoc hearing, going back to revisit the issue of a potential continuance and your client's right to a speedy trial. Normally, I like to have things prepared, filed, noticed for hearing. There's an expediency to getting decisions made because of the closeness of the trial setting in your case. And if you're prepared, if you want to address the state's proposed remedy, that a continuance to allow Mr. Pryor time for testing would or would not impact the speedy trial rights asserted by your client. If you're prepared to address that, you can. If not, go ahead and any other argument you've got, I'll consider.
Yes, Your Honor. Every day that I visit with my client, we talk about her right to a speedy trial. It is important to her. We've filed a motion. The court has made a decision. And it's something that we'll continue to talk about. If these cases are severed today, then we'll continue to talk about speedy trial. And so I don't think that, this late, disclosure of DNA evidence justifies taking away my client's right to a speedy trial. And so where Mr. Daybell has already waived speedy trial, that's why his attorney can ask for more time, and I understand that. And I agree with that this DNA evidence does need defense expert analysis. From my client's standpoint, she's been in jail 3 years. Over 3 years now, arrested February 20th of 2020. And so here we are 3 years later, and she still hasn't had her day in court. The first case, $5 million bond, that case was dismissed. Second case against her, $1 million bond, that case was dismissed. And now here we are, and she still has not had her day in court. And so I think there are some problems with continuing the matter unless my client will waive her right to a speedy trial. So So, for example, if this court grants the severance today, as Mr. Pryor has asked for, and grants the continuance, then I'll continue to talk to her about that, about does she want to join in that? Does she want to go ahead and go to trial in April? So, yes, those are ongoing conversations that we have every time we meet, and I'll continue to do that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Archibald. I'd like to allow the state one additional argument there, if you'd like, Ms. Blake, since I brought up the motion as it relates to speedy trial based on your first argument and then just on the response there. So on the limited scope of that, if you'd like to offer any argument.
Your Honor, I think the state had addressed our thoughts with regard to speedy trial. I think under the current case law, the court could find good cause for the delay. Again, if there's good cause to continue Mr. Daybell's case, I think there would be good cause to consider Ms. Vallow's side of things, especially given her defense counsel's representation that they believe that evidence should also be tested and could hold value. It would seem that there would be good cause to continue hers out. Again, I think it could be continued in such a manner that we didn't go too far past where we're currently set.
And, Your Honor, there's no way that I'm conceding what she just said. There's no way I'm conceding that. She's not going to blame their dilatory tactics on me.
Okay. That'll conclude then the argument on pending motions. I'm going to take a few moments to review those arguments. I'm prepared to make some rulings today from the bench. Let's take a recess. I'm going to say about 20 minutes, so maybe shortly before 10:30, we'll come back on the bench, and the court's prepared to make rulings at this time. So we will take that recess now.
All right.
Okay, we're back on the record on cases CR 22-211623, State versus Chad Guy Daybell, and CR 22-211624, State versus Lori Noreen Vallow Daybell. Court took a recess to consider the additional arguments submitted today as they relate to pending motions filed by the defense. Before the court, pending are certain motions from hearings previously scheduled. There's in the 1623 case, Daybell's second motion to compel. That was filed February 7th, 2023, and heard on February 23rd. The Daybell's second renewed motion to sever, filed February 13th, also heard on February 23rd with continued argument today. And the motion to dismiss, also filed by Daybell February 10th, 2023, which was heard February 23rd and also heard today. The court's considered the arguments here and the circumstances of this case. We'll note that trial is scheduled to commence on April 3rd in this case with jury selection, or not selection, but beginning of picking of jurors before that time, so less than a month away. The timing is important for the court to consider as it relates to these motions. Starting off with the motion to compel, some of that's been resolved. The court has considered the arguments. Some of the issues raised on the motion to compel relate to the 12 terabytes of data that were argued to have been lately disclosed. The motion's deemed to be resolved based on the representations of Mr. Pryor today, that he's been able to download that information. So the court will not grant the motion on that issue. Regarding the receipt of tips that had been gathered in 1,188 pages, based on other circumstances and for rulings today, the court's going to deny the motions as it relates to those tips because the court, number one, they were properly disclosed in time, the court finds, although late, and number two, I believe there will be adequate time for the defense to consider those. The next issue that was brought up and argued extensively and which weighs in to the factor in another ruling I'll make here in a moment is it relates to the newly discovered DNA evidence. And when I say newly discovered DNA evidence, it's evidence that was gathered in 2020, the record reflects, but was recently tested, which came up with some testing results that require further testing. On that issue as it relates to the motion to compel, the court will, I don't find that a motion to compel would be appropriate to grant at this time. However, the court will order that the DNA evidence be provided to, upon request, the defense for any further testing, as has been stated by Mr. Pryor. There is a line of cases that does permit a defendant in exercising their procedural and due process rights to have independent testing done of DNA evidence, including the State versus Rhodes case. So I do find that it's a right a defendant has, particularly in a capital case. What we have here, that defense testing is permitted of DNA evidence. So I will deny the motion as it relates to the DNA evidence in that I'll just instruct the parties to cooperate in providing the evidence for further testing if that's requested. And then Mr. Pryor, if there's an issue with further testing, that would need to be rescheduled and heard. Otherwise, I'll leave it up to the parties to deal with any further testing that would come up. The next motion then is the motion to sever. And I'll take some time walking through this decision on the motion to sever. As has been noted by the state, the case was properly joined for trial, and it's remained properly joined for trial under Criminal Rule 8. There's factors the court's already determined, including the charges, the conspiracy elements of the charges, which, having considered all those factors, I've previously denied motions to sever, and I have found that these cases were properly joined, as well as the counts properly joined for a single trial. At this point, there's been a renewed motion to sever, and it ties directly into this DNA evidence. The time frames, again, are important here for the court to consider. I don't find that there's been any Brady violations, as have been asserted in the motion to sever. And also, I'll note explicitly on the record that I know and work with these prosecutors on a regular basis, and I don't believe that in any way they have either intentionally or strategically delayed the disclosure of any evidence in this case. However, the simple fact of the matter before the court is we're now on the eve of trial, and there is new evidence. And having been advised of what this evidence is, we know something about what it is, and we know we don't know a lot about what it may be, and I'm not going to engage in speculation to determine what this evidence may or may not show. What we do know is there's something there. What we do know is that additional testing can be done, which will likely lead to more information. What we do know is that there's at least a real and material chance here that this could be exculpatory evidence. It could also be inculpatory evidence. It could also be evidence of no material value, that there's something there, and that something can be tested to get further answers. But all parties agree that under any circumstance, that testing cannot be completed by the time trial begins. The testing cannot be then transferred for further testing by the defense before trial begins. And so I've considered how that would impact this case. Again, I found the joint trials were appropriate. It's more efficient. It's more cost effective. There are other factors to consider, such as avoiding inconsistent verdicts in different trials. It's a right that the state has proven it's entitled to in this case. However, circumstances can arise, and the court also has to consider whether or not going forward with a joint trial in this case would impair the due process rights of the defendants. The question is whether or not unfair prejudice would result. Under Idaho Criminal Rule 14, severance can take place, and that rule says if it appears that a defendant or the state is prejudiced by joinder of the offenses or defendants in an indictment. And then the court may grant a severance of the defendants if it appears again that there would be unfair prejudice. There are some cases that the courts reviewed that define further what that may mean. The Ochoa case that's been cited by the state, I've reviewed that case. In the Ochoa case, the magistrate who tried a vehicular manslaughter case excluded a toxicology report that was the toxicology of the victim in that case. And later on appeal, it was determined that the magistrate was correct and allowed to exclude that report. And one of the statements in that case of Ochoa, to qualify for a continuance based on late discovery, a party must not only show the late disclosures generally prejudice the party, but they must also show that a fair trial was denied because there was a reasonable probability that the result of the proceedings would have been different had the additional time been granted. In Ochoa, there was, as it is stated in the case, Ochoa asserted what they called a bare claim that she was prejudiced by the late disclosure of a full toxicology report, and that was, I think, the day of or the day before trial. I see some distinguishing factors from Ochoa in this case. Number one, these are capital cases, and we're not on the day of trial or on the day before trial. We're not dealing with a bare assertion that we might have evidence here that would change the result. And what I'm absolutely not willing to do is engage in any speculation about what this new DNA evidence may end up revealing. If we were to just roll the dice and go to trial and have this continue to be tested and find out later on, well, it really wasn't anything, then we'd be okay. If we find out later on or during trial, well, it was something. What do we have then, a mistrial? Do we have convictions that have to be vacated because of this new evidence that we knew about before trial started? And the decisions before the court now. And in this case, again, just discovery of this evidence and when it's been disclosed does not require a severance in this case. What I believe and have determined does require a severance is the fact that trial is scheduled to start when I've indicated that it's undisputed that the further testing, which would lead to more answers about this DNA, cannot be done by the time of trial. And we have a defendant, Mrs. Ballow Daybell, in the 1624 case, who has not and will not waive her right to a speedy trial. So in order to deal with this evidence, I find that by going forward, if I required Mr. Daybell to start trial without knowing what the evidence was, that would deprive him of procedural and due process rights to be adequately prepared for trial, and more importantly, to potentially obtain what may be exculpatory evidence in the case. So I'm not going to do that. So my first finding then is that Mr. Daybell is entitled to have his trial continued based on the request because of the disclosure time of this DNA evidence. So where Mr. Daybell's case gets continued, then where does that leave us with the 1624 case where Mrs. Vallow Daybell has not waived speedy trial? There's been a argument by the state, which I have strongly considered and looked at, that we could still keep these cases joined for trial and not have to sever them under Rule 14. If a delay in order to allow additional time for testing were imposed by the court and force a continuance in that case against her right and without her request, the court has to go back and look at the factors of speedy trial, which have been brought up today, and under the Barco versus Wingo factors, there's four factors there the court looks at: the length of the delay, the reason for the delay, when a defendant asserted the right, and prejudice to the defendant. It's clear that in this case, the right was asserted from the beginning. She's never equivocated on that. The reason for the delay, again, without laying personal blame on anyone, it's the state's evidence that was gathered in 2020 and has gone through different stipulations, issues about whether it would be consumptive or not. But the reality is, just very recently here, this evidence now has been discovered that can be additionally tested. And the reason for delay there has to be attributed to the state in that case. The length of the delay, if I were to continue this, because the matter has been transferred to Ada County, I don't believe it could be a short delay. I think it would require a lengthier delay. I would, based on information I have, think it would have to be more than 6 months additional. And if there were a way to even fast track that and minimize the delay, I still have to consider that fourth factor of the prejudice to the defendant. And part of the thing you look at is not just the procedural history of this case and when arraignment took place, but you have to look at the total time that somebody's been incarcerated. And she's been incarcerated, as Mr. Archibald said, I guess it's over 3 years now, on evidence directly related to the charges now pending in this case. And I do understand there were significant periods of time attributable to the defense in the delays with the mental commitment proceedings. But beyond that, in this case, since those issues have resolved, there's just never been any equivocation on that right. And so if I force a continuance here, then I have to violate Mrs. Vallow Daybell's right to a speedy trial, the way I weigh those factors out, and again, considering those factors which I've previously considered in this case. We've already gone beyond time under the Idaho statute, which I believe was justified and determined in the last decision, but I don't find that a further continuance because of this late disclosure would withstand a challenge on the constitutional basis of that asserted right to speedy trial. So, given the unique circumstances of this case, I've also looked at the standard on severance under the State versus Fox case. That's a recent case, 170 Idaho 846. And that state's Idaho Criminal Rule 14 provides a backstop to prevent joining charges in a matter that may unfairly prejudice a defendant. And I would find that continuing to require Mr. Daybell to go forward without having an opportunity or time possible to test the evidence to determine what it is would result in an unfair prejudice. It would simply require too much speculation for the court to guess that this evidence isn't going to matter and isn't going to impact the defense. Mr. Pryor stated that it would. it's logical that a defendant wants to know whose DNA it is. Is it a crime scene? It's pretty elemental, I think, in looking at how one may defend a case. It's a capital case. There's extra precautions that should be taken there to ensure the right to a fair trial. It's been discovered before trial. And upon consideration of all these factors, then, I am determining that a severance has got to be made in this case, and I have to allow a continuance of Mr. Daybell. It's not a decision I've reached easily. It's been a lot of time and work and effort to have this case prepared to begin trial, and the courts have done everything to make sure we've been ready to go on the dates that are set. It's disappointing. I know it's going to increase costs for the county. It's going to require potentially two full separate trials. But I have to balance these rights of these defendants in this case. And so that's the court's decision under Rule 14. I do find that because it would unfairly prejudice Mr. Daybell's rights to be forced to go to trial with this new discovery, severance is the only option I see. So the renewed motion to sever is granted, and the court will sever the trials. I'll still be maintaining all the dates of the pretrial setting in the order in Mrs. Vallow Daybell's case, and her case will remain on for trial and will go to trial on April 3rd. The court will vacate the trial setting as it relates to Mr. Daybell, and a new trial date will be scheduled. The final motion under advisement that I want to deal with today is the motion to dismiss, or alternatively to strike the death penalty. That was a motion filed on February 10th by Mr. Pryor, and it does tie into and relate to, again, the issue of evidence that he claims was lately disclosed and should result in sanctions. Given the court's decision on a severance and having fully considered those new arguments, I don't find that there's been a Brady violation at this point. I don't find that there's been any conduct which would justify the extreme sanction of a dismissal of the indictment or alternatively striking the notice of intent to seek death penalty. I think the concerns brought up in that motion to dismiss the indictment have been resolved through granting of a severance and granting of a continuance in that case to allow additional time for preparation. So that will be the ruling on that motion. So those three motions have been ruled on. I'll start with Mr. Pryor then. Those were your motions I ruled on. Do you have any questions on the court's rulings at this time?
No, Judge, and just for the record, the 12 terabytes has been identified as being prepared for me to pick up. I haven't been able to download it. I will be picking it up shortly. So that's just a clarification, Judge. I don't think it has any consequence, but there's no other questions, Judge, on the court's other rulings. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Do you have any questions on the court's rulings today?
I guess we basically have a request. Given the court's order to sever, which the state respects the court's order, while that was not what the state was hoping for, we would ask if the court would inquire on the record if Ms. Vallow is waiving having her counsel explore these additional DNA findings. I think essentially we've kind of had two separate things addressed by Ms. Vallow Daybell regarding believing that there may be value in this evidence, but also maintaining her right to a fair trial, which the state understands. But it appears that she would be choosing speedy trial over her ability to test that evidence additionally. So I think we would just ask for some kind of inquiry on the record to reflect that so that we don't have invited error by Ms. Daybell.
All right. Before I ask for a response on that from Mr. Archibald, I think the record's been made pretty clear that defense counsel would like and likely need more time to explore this evidence. However, have been directed by their client to move forward with trial as scheduled. So I understand that. I don't know if I should or am willing to require some kind of a waiver on the record to that effect. It's a defense strategy and clearly an issue that the defendant needs to be made aware of and explained. But Mr. Archibald, if you have any questions on the rulings, you can ask at this time. And if you'd like to address that request from the state, you may as well.
I don't have any questions about the court's ruling, and no, I'm not going to answer the state's question.
Okay. That will conclude the hearing on the motions today then. Counsel, given these developments, we'll reach out, and we do have hearings scheduled again a week from today, I believe, on the 9th. And I'll likely be reaching out to counsel before then as it relates to the impact of the court's decision to sever the cases going forward. So just for some scheduling purposes, I'll reach out in a ministerial way off the record through counsel, through my staff attorney here, just to determine whether we want to have any sort of a planning discussion before the 9th. So if you'll watch for that, that will conclude the matters taken up before the court today, and we'll be in recess.
All rise.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
There's a reason they're called the Doomsday Couple. Chad and Lori Daybell, of course, will keep covering that for you right here. Press subscribe wherever you download podcast. April ain't far away. In fact, we're looking at less than a month before the Lori Vallow trial begins. Of all the analysis for you right here. So please do press subscribe. You can even get a commercial-free experience wherever you download a podcast, or specifically, rather, on Apple Podcasts, when you subscribe there to our premium channel. Get access to all of the cases we're following, all ad-free, and our archive as well, in case you want to go back and relive the magic of something like Alec Murdaugh or something like that day by day. Yes, do it all over again. I'm Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at TonyBPod. Stay with us.